looks at how everything from our bodies to our brains impact the way that we behave around money. The brain in particular is interesting because our brains have not evolved in nearly 200,000 years, but developed stock markets like we have in the US and Australia are only about 400 to 500 years old. So our brains are really evolved for a place and time that's very different than the ones that we find ourselves in now. And the realities of what was asked of our ancient ancestors is very different than what's asked of us. So our brain is wired for immediacy. It's wired to make quick sort of spur of the moment decisions to keep us safe. And if you look at the history of humankind, there used to be two handfuls of different human species. And the reasons, one of the primary reasons why Homo sapiens survived when the others didn't is because we were risk averse. And so this, this fear of risk, this fear of loss as well, is what kept us safe, in primitive times.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. An Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
You'd think it would be simple to be an investor, and you want to buy a share, you press a button. When you want to sell a share, you press a button. That part is simple. It's just the rest of it that isn't. What is behind this decision making? One would think it was just a matter of if the company has been performing well and they've made a profit. There are other considerations as well. A whole reasoning behind why we make decisions and when's the best time to make a decision. Today's guest, Dr. Daniel Crosby, is a psychologist and a behavioral finance expert who helps organizations understand the intersection of minds and markets. So we'll be covering things like how does the brain impact financial decision making, and even how our body and physical health impact financial choices we make. Dr. Crosby is also an author. His first book, Personal Benchmark, Integrating Behavioral Finance and Investment Management, was a New York Times bestseller. His second book, The Laws of Wealth, was named the best investment book of 2017 by the Aximan Business Book Awards and has been translated into 5 languages. His latest work, The Behavioral Investor, is a comprehensive look at the neurology, physiology, and psychology of sound financial decision making. So let's find out what the most common types of behavioral errors we make and how that affects our finances and our decision making. Welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy show with your host today, Anne Nelson. And I have on the line Dr. Daniel Crosby. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So where in the world are you located, Daniel?
I am in the sunny southeastern part of the United States in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right. Well, I'm here in sunny North Queensland.
Like I said, my family is going to get to go there. I'm afraid I will not be with them, but I'm jealous that they'll get that adventure later this summer.
Now, I always like to, for our listeners, to have a bit of a background on our guests. So you have a new book coming out, The Behavioral Investor, but this isn't your first piece of writing. So can you give us a bit of a background on what led you to write books?
Yes, I am a psychologist by education. I'm actually a clinical psychologist by education, but I grew up the son of a financial advisor. And so you know, about halfway through my doctoral program in psychology, I began to tire of the work of a clinician. And I said, you know, I enjoy thinking deeply about why people behave the ways that they do, but I don't want to be a clinical doctor in this way. So I began to look for non-medical applications of psychology and was drawn, I think, quite naturally because of how I grew up in my, you know, in my parents' home to the world of finance and the world of behavioral economics and behavioral finance. And so, yeah, through a series of fortunate events, I, you know, struck out on my own about 12 years ago now, and recently was hired on at a large asset manager here in the United States. But yes, I've, you know, had a great run of writing books on how we think about money, how we behave around money, and how we can kind of get out of our own way.
It's very interesting that you have become known for your books about psychology and our investing habits. And what would you like to share with us today? I believe you have thoughts about how the brain impacts financial decision making.
Yeah, I do. My new book, The Behavioral Investor, the first part of that looks at how everything from our bodies to our brains impact the way that we behave around money. The brain in particular is interesting because our brains have not evolved in nearly 200,000 years, but you know, developed stock markets like we have in the US and Australia are only about 400 to 500 years old. So our brains are really evolved for a place and time that's very different than the ones that we find ourselves in now. And the realities of what was asked of our ancient ancestors is very different than what's asked of us. So our brain is wired for immediacy. It's wired to make quick sort of spur of the moment decisions to keep us safe. And if you look at the history of humankind, you know, there used to be two handfuls of different human species. And the reasons, you know, one of the primary reasons why Homo sapiens survived when the others didn't is because we were risk averse. And so this, you know, this fear of risk, this fear of loss as well, is what kept us safe, you know, in primitive times. But it's that very same fear of loss and fear of risk that may lead us to, you know, overtrade our account, not take adequate risk, not allocate enough of our wealth to stocks and other instruments that will keep up inflation. And so, yeah, things that have served us well historically don't always serve us well today.
That's very interesting. We're still primeval.
Yeah, we are. And, you know, another fact that I love is that, you know, our brains only account for 2 to 3% of the weight of our body, and yet they account for about 25 to 30% of all the calories we spend in a given day. And so our bodies are always looking for ways to think less and to do less work and take some of that cognitive load off. And so, you know, a couple of the ways that we do that is we look to our friends or neighbors and try and mimic their financial behaviors, which, you know, may be good or bad. We turn on the television, turn on, you know, the news and look at the financial talking heads there and try and replicate their behavior, which again, may be good or bad. And so it's very interesting. The more you learn about the brain, the more you understand that we really are primeval and that we're not wired to make optimal decisions for sure.
So what else affects our financial choices that we make? Does the body or our physical health have anything to do with them?
Yes, you know, the body has a great deal to do with it. And it happens beneath our awareness as well. I think that's important to understand, is that each of us moves through our day thinking that we're making, you know, sane, rational, good decisions. And yet I cite research in the book out of Israel, where they looked at the decisions of Israeli judges, and the best predictor of whether that judge was harsh or lenient when sentencing the person in front of them was how recently they had had a meal or a snack. And so it's scary to think that very impactful decisions, you know, decisions that deal with someone's life and potentially their death could be could hang in the balance of how recently you've had a snack. And, you know, the same thing applies to investors. You know, if we're emotional, if we're hungry, if we're tired, none of these are optimal times to be making decisions about our retirement or our finances.
And is that to do with that we have emotions attached to everything we do?
Yeah, that's very well put. You know, I cite research in the book that shows that people with the emotional processing centers of their brains damaged actually have trouble making almost any decision. You know, they have trouble making very everyday decisions about what to eat or what to wear. And yet they make very good investors. You know, they're very good gamblers, and they're very good financial decision makers. So what we learn from this research is, you know, first of all, there is no such thing as an unemotional decision. You know, every decision, no matter how big or small, has an emotional current that runs beneath it. But to the extent possible, we want to avoid emotional extremes when making financial decisions. If we're feeling, you know, very, very angry or very hungry or tired or lonely or, you know, whatever it may be, we want to put off making big decisions about retirement and wealth until such a time that we're in a more even-keeled place.
Well, the only way I've heard of to take emotion out of the equation is to have robots do it for us.
Well, you know, there's potentially something to that. Of course, though, you can still override the robot. I think what robot advisors do well is they allocate your money in a sensible way. But we have to make sure that whether we're working with a financial advisor or a robo-advisor, that we don't override their best advice, because we're certainly capable of doing that in a moment of panic.
So what are the four most common types of behavioral errors that there are? Perhaps we could go through them one by one.
Sure. So the first of these is overconfidence. So overconfidence means that we, humankind on average, thinks that they are luckier than average. They think that they are smarter and better than average, and they think that they can forecast the future better than they actually can. So if you think about that, you know, Australia's retirement setup is far, far superior to ours here in the U.S. But if you think about that sort of overconfidence as applied to something like preparing for retirement, it might lead you to underprepare. It might lead you to hold excessively concentrated stock positions. It might lead you to take risks that you ought not to, because you think that nothing bad can happen to you and that you're invincible. So, I mean, there's a whole host of problems. But the first of these stems from the fact that we as a human species are overconfident. And this is especially problematic with men. I don't mind saying men are more prone to this than women are. So,
That's interesting that men are more prone to confidence than women.
Men are more prone to overconfidence. So
overconfidence.
Like, yeah, excessive confidence, like confidence unto poor decision-making.
All right. I've heard too, I don't know if this is one of your types of behavioral errors, but if we don't think we've got enough, that we can take on unnecessary risks too. So how would you categorize that?
That could be partially that ego, that overconfidence. I think it also has an element of the second one, the second of these pillars, it's emotion. We've touched on that a bit. But, you know, someone who recognizes that they have a retirement shortfall may well take on excessive risk, thinking that, you know, it's time to play catch up and I need to get across the finish line. And so that may be partially to, you know, down to an emotional reaction that coincides with this ego that says, well, I can take this risk and nothing bad will happen to me. You know, of course, the reality is that there's a very tight relationship between risk and reward in financial markets. And so, you know, more potential reward almost always means more potential risk.
That's very interesting too. And I suppose we see that more and more as I believe there's a huge percentage of baby boomers or future retirees that have not got much in their retirement savings accounts?
That is certainly the case here. It's certainly the case that the average American pre-retiree is woefully underprepared. I mean, they don't even have, they have something like one fifth of the average medical expenses covered, and that's it for, you know, for their entire retirement. So I can't speak for the rest of the world. I know it's a dramatic problem here.
Yeah. Well, we introduced compulsory retirement savings that your employer puts away for you in Australia. But if you don't work permanently, or, you know, there's many reasons, or you have a work life that's interrupted, there's many reasons why you get behind.
Yeah, sure.
So what are some other types of behavioral errors?
Yeah, so the third of the four would be what's called conservatism. So this is our tendency to confuse what we know with what is safe in investment markets. And so, you know, an easy example of this is what's called home country bias. So, you know, we'll use our two countries as examples. You know, people in the U.S. Tend to be dramatically overweight U.S. stocks. The same is true of Australia, and candidly, the same is true of every country. The general rule of thumb is that you should own stock relative to how large a country is in terms of global GDP. So if you look at something like the U.S. that makes up about half of global GDP, for the average American, you should have about a 50% equity exposure to the U.S., and yet we find that the average American has more like an 80 to 85% exposure to the U.S. And the reason being, we think we're safe when we're investing in companies that we know, that we've heard of, when in actuality, that's false. And we need to buy things we don't know and that we haven't heard of, and we have to ensure that we have worldwide exposure in our portfolios. So that's that conservatism piece. And then the last of these is attention. Attention is our tendency to confuse something that's scary or dramatic with something that's probable. And so, you know, a good example of this is something like in life, it's shark attacks. You know, people, you know, I think like 3 people per year die from shark attacks. And yet, you know, we talk about them and have movies about them as though they happen every day. In financial markets, I think it would be something like, you know, a Great Depression or a Great Recession type financial calamity that we think about all the time, we talk about all the time, we worry about all the time, and yet we've had 2 sort of grand calamities in the U.S. in the last 100 years. And so, you know, we worry about them with a frequency and an intensity that's not matched by their likelihood.
Right. Well, that's all very interesting. This is all the things that can hinder us in our making our investing decisions. So what can we do to get over these behavioral errors?
Yeah, so there's, you know, we've probably scared the listeners a bit now, so it's a great question. There's a couple of things you can do. So one thing we can do is we can automate. You know, one of the most powerful things you can do from a behavioral perspective is just to automate the way that the money gets taken out of your account, the way that you save it, the way that you spend it. We can use technology to put automation principles in place. We can, you know, put stops on how much we spend if we're on a fixed income in retirement. If we're saving for retirement, we can, you know, automate the withdrawal of that money, how it gets invested, how it gets escalated over time. Because, you know, one of the things that's true about humankind, unfortunately, is we're kind of lazy and forgetful. So the good news is, you know, the bad news is if we let that laziness and forgetfulness get in our way, we may find ourselves ready for retirement and underprepared. But if we lock in a good program and then just automate that and forget about it, that forgetfulness can actually work in our favor. So automation is a huge key. Using technology is a huge key. You know, I'm also a big advocate for working with a financial coach or a financial advisor. You know, research here shows that people that work with a financial advisor tend to do about 2 to 3% better per year than those who do not, just because that financial professional can guide you through difficult waters and can help you make good decisions along the way. So yeah, working with a financial professional is huge. And I think a third piece is just education, you know, reading books like The Laws of Wealth that will teach you about the basics of personal finance, how to ask the right questions of the professionals you do work with.
It's probably the key to nearly anything is to know the right questions to ask.
Sure, yeah.
How much does fear play a part in this? I believe when you consult a financial advisor, they're supposed to do a questionnaire, a study of you to determine what type of risk you can take. So if you come up against someone that doesn't want to take any risk at all, and then they end up thinking the only thing they can do is put their money in term deposits, say in the bank, their money's not going to grow very much, is it?
No, it's not. And you bring up a great point, because yes, a financial advisor, one of the first things she would do is to give you a risk tolerance questionnaire to see about your appetite for risk. Of course, some people don't have much money saved and they don't have much tolerance for risk. And in some cases, they don't have much time. And so, you know, something's got to give. And so in those instances, I think it becomes part of the financial advisor's duty to educate that person, to help them understand the kind of risk they do need to take. Because something that people don't account for is inflation. And, you know, again, I apologize, I couldn't speak to the way that inflation rates look around the world. But in the U.S., it's historically about 3% a year. You know, for example, the sort of term deposit you've talked about here in the U.S. would give you about 2% a year now, but inflation would be about 3%. So if you're trying to play it safe, you're actually losing money, right? Like, you know, in your very best effort to avoid losing capital, you are actually losing capital with certainty. So it's a bit of a catch-22 there, and it's absolutely the job of an advisor to assess that risk tolerance and to help you take as much risk as you need to get to your destination, but not one bit more.
Oh, well, thanks for helping with that question. And before we finish up, how prevalent is the automation of people's investing gotten to these days?
Well, I think it's getting more and more prevalent. And, you know, there was actually a Nobel Prize given out in the last couple of years for someone's work around automation, because it has been such a boon for investors. You know, the research was around this concept of automating the withdrawal and the escalation of retirement savings. And those two very simple steps have resulted in tens of billions in increased retirement savings. So, you know, one thing to keep in mind in the world of investments and the world of personal finance is it can become a bit daunting. It can become a bit scary, but a lot of times the most powerful solutions are some of the simplest ones. So don't confuse, you know, the complexity and the dynamism of the stock market with a need for equally complex solutions for your personal wealth, because often it's quite simple.
Thanks very much. It's been really interesting.
Yes, thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We've been listening to Dr. Daniel Crosby. And how would people get in touch, listeners get in touch with you, Daniel, if they wanted to find out more about you or find where your books are, your latest work, The Behavioral Investor?
Yes. So I would encourage people. I have my own podcast called Standard Deviation. So you can find me there on Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm at Daniel Crosby on Twitter. And the books are The Laws of Wealth and The Behavioral Investor. And they're probably Amazon is probably the easiest place there.
And when you're not in the financial world, what are you doing?
Well, I've got three young children. I have a wife and three young children, and that'll keep you very busy.
Thank you. And I see that you also support the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team.
I'm a huge baseball fan. I am.
That's nice to be passionate and have follow a team. Over here, I follow the North Queensland Cowboys, which is a rugby league team. So you probably haven't heard of that type of football.
I'm vaguely familiar with rugby from time I spent in Hawaii. So Hawaii had a big emphasis on rugby. So I know enough to be dangerous.
Well, thanks very much for sharing your expertise with me and my listeners today. And I look forward to finding out more about behavioral finance and investment management and the laws of wealth and behavioral investing.
All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.